Hey everybody, welcome to 372 Pages We'll Never Get Back, the podcast book club where we read books that we are not expecting to like. That has borne out as we have been currently reading The Mister by E.L. James. We are in the home stretch. This is the second to last Mister episode. And, you know, not a lot has happened, but we have some drama to discuss this week. We, of course, being myself, Connor Lestoka, and Mike Nelson, who is joining me as always.
Hello, Connor. Yes, it is 7/8 of the way through the book. We have an inciting incident, finally.
Yes.
And it's a repeated beat of something that has already happened.
Yep, yep.
It's just a new version of it.
Yes. So, something
the other
bad.
One fizzled like a wet firecracker. This one kind of worked.
Something bad happened. He escaped it by virtue of sheer luck, and then he decided to just throw caution to the wind and pretty much behave the same way again and with the same results. Fool him twice, as the saying goes.
Yep. Hey, before we dive in, I was inspired by the reading this week, and I was thinking of, I have a side project. Nope. And I just wanted to run it past you and see what you think, get some notes, get okay. some feedback. It's the humor of the Mister. Like the, uh-huh. I don't know, I need to come up with a snappier title.
Like humor in uniform in Reader's Digest.
Type. Yeah, like Maxim, the wit and wisdom of Maxim Trevathick.
Maxim's Maxims, like yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So here's a few of the jokes that I pulled out, and I'll need to rework them. But good morning, she whispers, and here's Maxim. It is now, he answers. Huh?
Oh, yeah, like, so yeah.
I love your face. I'm rather attached to it as well.
Oh, my God.
That's my favorite joke. But this one's pretty good, too. I don't know how old you are, he laughs. Old enough to know better. So anyway, those are just a few of the jokes, the wit and wisdom of Maxim Trevathick.
To me, it's encouraging that E.L. didn't, like, take the sellout route you could do as a, you know, millionaire author and just, you know, hire ghost uncredited, you know, Patton Oswalt to come in and punch up your book. She did it all.
You think this is the unpunched up version?
Oh, she did it all herself. So, okay. So, you know, credit to her. She didn't sell out and give some big shot, you know, $500,000 to come up with one liner. So she's staying right. true to herself. You got to admire that, even if the result is garbage.
Yes, that's true. She didn't hire the team that, you know, writes jokes for the actors at the Oscars or whatever, which no matter how hard they try, come out as lame as hell.
It would have been nice if you did turn to the last page and she gave a big thank you to Bruce Valanche for his uncredited role in this
that's
thing.
That's right.
Still alive?
I think so. I mean, we would have seen the flags at half mast had he passed
yes.
away.
Still alive. Yep, 70 years old. All right, good.
Well, let's bring everyone up to date. The Mister and Alicia, our favorite Albanian, maybe our favorite Albanian. It's not Connor's favorite.
No,
Albanian
second favorite.
Sure. Second favorite Albanian. By the way, when we were talking about that, did we bring up the fact that John Belushi was Albanian?
Wow, no, I don't think we have. Still, okay, that's still, still doesn't crack my top one.
Right.
Not going to replace it. Huh.
Yeah. So up to this point, Maxim, the rich and the landed lord and DJ
yep.
and photographer
yes,
has mooned around with his maid, Alicia DiMacci.
DiMacci, is that it? Yes.
So there's been about 480 pages of them lolling about in bed. Having sex is basically, that's what we've been up till now.
Interspersed with them deciding that the other one has like just utter contempt for them. Like they're as in love as Romeo and Juliet. And then the next page they are like, she must hate me. Like I've bollocks this whole thing up, like type of thing. So yes. they're just seesawing rapidly between those two poles.
Unsure of their relationship while engaged in intercourse is what they've done for 480 pages. But now we have something. So should we dive in?
Yeah, I think so. So we left off with them doing one of those seesaws where she had just discovered he was the Earl of Trevithick, and despite not knowing exactly what that means, she felt very betrayed by him keeping that secret from her. But then they had sex a whole bunch, and that was solved. But they are getting ready to head back to his home because he's been burgled by two people who he assumes are the same people that they just kicked the crap out of when they came to abduct her. But yeah, they sort of we joined them at the start of chapter 25. They are waking up in the morning after the after their marathon session. The first thing that I noted was in the soft light from the little dragon, I see that she's asleep beside me, but utterly still, her hands clenched into fists beneath her chin. She's like a statue petrified by some natural disaster. She parts her lips and cries out again, the most eerie and unearthly of sounds. So I'd like to hear what that might sound like, if you can just, this eerie and unearthly sound that she's crying out in her sleep.
Hang on, let me ball my fists up under my chin. Okay, there they are. And then an unearthly, what describe it again?
The most eerie and unearthly of sounds.
Okay, here we go. And I'm an Albanian, 23-year-old Albanian woman.
Yeah, that sounds like a witch dragging her fingers across a glass window. I thought of more like a, like a whale song is what I was sort of, that was my whale song.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a good whale song.
Also, I'd like to say that the little dragon can go to hell. That is a that is not something that I am attached to. I do not think it's cute. I don't think it's sweet. I am very irritated by its presence.
That's the one that he bought while buying like a sack of Trojan XLs or whatever.
Yeah. He would just like, yeah, and toss that little dragon in there because that'll help right. That'll help keep her infantilized.
Right. Well, after she wakes up after this unearthly and ghostly experience, he says, Alicia, it's me, Maxim. And she goes, Maxim? And stops struggling. And then she added after that, a ghost?
Full cartoon stuttering.
Yeah. Maxim?
Well, so yeah, she's clearly making these unearthly noises and unsure of where she is and, you know, is probably dreaming about these horrible things that have happened. But he's having a great time. I close my eyes, one hand in her hair and the other on her back, enjoying her weight and her skin against mine. I could get used to this. So yeah, she's got long lasting trauma, the scars of which will probably never really heal. But he's all for it. If this is the end result, you know, however you get there.
Just got to watch that bruise, but otherwise, yeah. Yeah, she throws her arms around his neck and surrenders gladly to his skilled mouth.
Yeah.
Skilled?
He can spell the alphabet, baby.
That's what I say when I give my wife a peck in the morning. Good morning, dear. And then I think about, she's going to enjoy my skilled mouth.
Yeah. I noticed you hadn't complimented my mouth lately. I've been been working out, doing some exercises. It's practicing. It'd be nice just to have it acknowledged.
I haven't even grabbed my bicep this morning. What's going on?
That was in response to him saying, "How are you feeling?" She says, "Good," and he says, "Good or good." And in his sultry tone, and she says, "Very good." So yeah, that was within moments of her waking up from her night terrors. He's given her the horny-o-meter on a scale of cold fish to wolf banging a chair on a table. Where are you, honey?
Oh, he's single-minded of purpose. That is for sure.
But, how can you resist when she's doing things like this? She gives me a dazzling smile over her shoulder, and like a sea mist in the breeze, my guilt fades into the ether. So that's...
What?
Yeah, that's... So that's his his one colorful flourish that he gets for this chapter. Otherwise, we're going to have to intervene.
She also likes to watch him shave, which I thought was, once again... Let's infantilize her even more.
Right.
She's turn like, off your nightlight and come watch me shave. Like, fold your hands, you know, and then set your chin on your hands and giggle at me as I shave.
Right. Or like the boy in Jaws, you know, what, you know, doing those movements, imitating his dad. That's that sort of thing. Right. Like a 7-year-old in a Gillette commercial.
Then she puts on, she's wearing the clothes I bought her, and I know it's going to be a good day. It's like, what, are there $1,000 bills stapled to the outside of the clothes? What does that mean? I don't understand what that means.
Yeah, that was not a central tenet of Ice Cube's good day. His was more focused on not having to shoot anybody, but hey, right. Whatever works for you.
Yeah.
But so he's they know that they have to return, and he's sort of upset about this. We've not been misled about the fact that he enjoys being there. And it's further demonstrated here. He says, part of me wants to stay with her here forever. We're well aware. Start of the next paragraph. It will be a shame to go back to London. We are getting the sense that he has been enjoying himself on this lost weekend up here, but they are going to have to leave. And they're both very distraught about that fact. They're returning to reality.
And I realized while reading this, I don't really know. I mean, what is he doing? He's occasionally administrating the estate, but those are just like grace notes of, oh, that's right. He has some sort of life. Here it is. His life is calling Oliver and going, right. Is everything going okay? And Oliver's like, yeah, it's fine, man.
Right.
Okay. Woo. I did my work for today.
Yeah. It does sound like he's delegated very well in terms of these competent people that he's working with. But he also talks about how since Kit died, now his whole life has been turned upside down with all these responsibilities he has. So the fact that last episode we demonstrated we have no idea what a lordship entails is some information that would have been appropriate, I think, to provide the non-British audience.
Right. But they so they get in the car and they're on the M4.
Oh, yeah.
Listening to Rachmaninoff.
Yeah, because Alicia takes command of the music.
And he says at one point, Lord, I have so much music I'd like to share with her. I just thought, oh, God, here come the mixtapes.
Right.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine what he's going to give her? And the handwritten, you know, the paper inserts that he colors himself with colored pencils to give to her.
Just sort of putting on a song and like sitting and looking at her, waiting for her reaction.
Basically the taking his headphones off and going, it's the Shins, oh, it'll change your life.
it's XYZ or whatever that guy's, the horrible guy's name was, it's the soundtrack to Arrival. But yeah, they're listening to Rachmaninoff, and that it fires up a memory for him.
Yes, indeed. I wish I had brought this up. I emailed Connor about this during my reading of it. He mentions, he just stops and says, have you seen Brief Encounter? No. It's a classic British film, and it's, I had brought this up before, and I was going to roll in a piece like 7 episodes ago or so about their insipid dialogue, and I just thought, I bet what she's trying to go for is this classic film called Brief Encounter, which is about two people who meet in a subway, have regular meetings and, you know, sort of chance encounters, and they kind of have an affair, but they don't. So it's this heartbreaking, you know, Casablanca for British people, very reserved two people who would never be doing this. And it's a beautiful film, sort of haunting, a classic. And she just uses that, drops that in the middle to borrow the valor of that movie, to
right.
steal its gravitas, and it is so clunky.
She got the Birds treatment when it showed up on a TV in the background of a cheap motel in Birdemic.
Right.
The good movie and the bad movie.
But as you pointed out, his virtue signaling or whatever is so lame, because this Albanian woman... who, as you said, hasn't seen a dog in a house before.
Right.
Have you seen Brief Encounter? Oh, of course. I have the Blu-ray of that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they do a 70mm series at the local art house. And so
right.
I got the subscription last year in between my betrothed trying to break my fingers.
Anyway, but, very, very lame.
So you've seen it and like it. So is she using the term classic in the authentic sense or in the Kleinian sense that the episode of Different Strokes where they meet the pervert in the bike shop is a classic.
Classic British, man. No, it's definitely worth a look. But as I say, it's dry. So if you go and watch it and you find yourself being bored, don't blame me. It's sort of built into the, it's built in. It's reserved.
Right. But he also says it's one of his mother's favorite films. And so that's another just sort of coincidence in the vein of the him having the Albanian flag as a tattoo, that sort of pointless thing that's not going to pay off in any sort of way, is that this song she keeps playing is a soundtrack of his mother's favorite movie.
Yes, right. Did you notice, by the way, that they fly past the junction for Swindon?
Oh, yeah, the Swindon lot. I did notice that, and I forgot about it till now. Oh, man. Chris Finch was in something else I just saw recently. I forget what it was. It was, what could it have been? Anyway, it's always
good. Yeah, I saw him, too, in something where I was like, God, this guy's turning up in a lot. Did you see The Witch?
Yeah, and that was, I didn't realize he was in that until you told me. I don't think I realized he was in Ready Player One until you told me, and so I was very proud that I noted him in whatever this. Oh, he was in Chernobyl, I think.
Yes, he was. That's what I saw him in, too.
All right.
For those of you wondering what the hell we're talking about, the actor who played Chris Finch in The British Office, who is from the, he's a Swindon, no, he's not a Swindon guy.
No, he's the traveling guy, the buddy that just pops into a traveling salesman for, I think, for Werner Hogg.
Anyway, just a great creepy friend of David Brent's. That's I love seeing him pop up in other stuff.
Yeah, it was a I don't regret anything about it, but the fact that I was in a room with just in January with only Janet Varney and Lucy Davis, who plays Dawn there, and I did not ask her any questions about Chris Finch is a. I guess that's a regret now.
I admire your reserve on that.
So we move along. Well, then here I'm gonna gauge your reaction when the Rachmaninoff ends. He says, "Choose another song." I prompt when the Rachmaninoff finishes, "Something cheerful." She smiles and scrolls through the list. I want your reaction to what she says. Melody? Well, yeah, exactly. He laughs when she says melody, and he laughs and says, "Rolling Stones? Yes, play that." So, one, she just picked that song based on the name, hoping it was cheerful. And two, it's hilarious when she says that song name out loud. So, all right. Yeah. I guess it was accurate.
Melody. At first I was saying, is she want something with some melody in it? Or there's a singer from, I think, like the 60s named Melody. I don't know.
Yeah, it is an enigma. The as you demonstrated not 10 minutes ago, the bar for humor is set quite low. So
very, very low. But we quickly get to, I'm assuming this is your favorite part of the book, the description of her time being transported to from Albania.
We've had a long gap in our Blariana backstory. Really, we've been left to fill it in our own headcanon. But yep, we're getting some details filled in.
Blariana from Fierza, and I just thought you have got to get a fanfic forum started about Blariana and Alicia crapping in the same bucket in a truck.
Oh man, let's read the whole thing. It's been so long. I was in a small bus to Skjorder. There we move on to the big truck. Dante and Ely are there with five other girls. One of them, I mean, she is only 17 years. I gasp, shocked, so young. Her name is Blariana. On the truck, we talked a lot. She lives in the north of Albania, too, in Fierza. We became friends. We made plans to find work together. She stops, lost in the horror of her story, or maybe she's wondering what became of her friend. And then cut ahead a little bit. They take everything from us, except the clothes we are wearing and our shoes. There is only one bucket in the back. You know, her voice smells. That's awful. Yes.
Her voice fades. Yes, her voice smells.
Oh, her voice, sorry. Her voice fades. That's awful. Yes, the smell. She shudders. So, yeah, I guess the implication is that Blariana was just wrecking it in the back of the sex trafficking truck. Like, excusing herself, you know, multiple times a day to just, to, you know, top off the bucket.
Yeah, it's It's like I just read a what is it called, Darkness at Noon, which is about communists, you know, taking a guy in the middle of the night to a, you know, solitary confinement prison, and it'd be like talking about that, and all you can talk about is your cellmates, you know, wrecking it. Like, how was it? I mean, it was just smelly stuff. It's just right. So awful. No, I mean, they tortured you with steel rods, right? Yeah, but the smell, yeah. Oh my God.
And like, they, you know, believe it or not, provided it was adequate toilet paper, but Bleriana just kept wiping. It wasn't, it's like she couldn't get it clean after the fact. Like, oh my God.
I have never seen a 17-year-old produce that much. I mean, it is impressive.
So, yeah, that's just an enlightening aspect into her, Blariana's character. And although I know it can't possibly happen, I think there's a chance, and I'm holding out hope, that it, because we have 50 pages left in this book, it would just be so amazing if the book ended with her, with Blariana, the 17-year-old, you know, still a sex slave, her fate not mentioned. Like, because he's going to Albania by the end of this chapter to confront her betrothed and her father. He's not, like, trying to crack the sex trafficking ring. So there's a chance, you know, that this just ends with this, this 17-year-old, you know, left to the fates, like a Game of Thrones character or something.
There's an addendum chapter of just, hello, it's Bleriana. Right. Is anyone there?
Shut up and use the bucket.
Well, I guess there's a tiny chance that instead of that, you know, doors kicked open, AK-47, it was Bleriana.
We got a fanfic similar to that submitted this week, essentially. Yes, people have seized on that. But yeah, I also think there's a chance that that he goes end of Armada, you know, where they cured cancer and all other diseases in one sentence. I suppose that could be the thing. Oh, and by the way, they cracked that trafficking ring and everyone was fine and sent home, type of thing.
Yeah, if you kill either Ely or Dante, it's like the spell is broken, you know, like the orcs all turn and run.
Sure, yeah.
The entire organization goes to hell.
Yeah, it's like killing the head vampire.
Yes.
But we also got a detail about why she was on the bus in the first place. And just to fill people in, it was just because her betrothed is a violent man. He does not like me playing the piano. He does not like the attention I get. And then he said if she kept playing the piano in public, he would break her fingers. And so she essentially got on this bus that I think was going to say that would find you a job in England. And I guess they were true about that. It just wasn't the good job she was hoping for. So that her mother snuck her onto that bus to get her away from this maniac.
Half of them were shipped to a soup plantation and the rest were sold into sex slavery.
They oversaw the U.S. volleyball team training at the soup plantation.
Yeah, that's right. His name, by the way, how are you pronouncing it, the last name of Anatoly?
Oh, where is it? I don't even...
Anatoly Thachi. It's a T-H-A, the C with the little wang dangling down in it.
Okay.
Thachi? Okay. Know. Anyway, he's a great character. He's coming up.
Yes, nuanced, subtle, like, you know, multi-layered. You know, he takes you in different directions. He's pure evil.
Snidely whiplash from Albania.
She talks about their journey in between trips to the bucket. It says we drove onto the ferry. The noise was loud, too loud. The sea was rough, so rough. I guess she didn't in the back of the van start going, the sea, even though evidently she's been on the sea before. So a complete fraud from what we were told earlier.
That's right. She was lying. Mm-hmm. That was performative. Yeah, she also mentions, well, she doesn't mention his name. I never say his name. Like Voldemort, I mutter under my breath. Because I am an idiot. I am an utter moron. He's talked about this dozens of times. Like, someday, maybe she'll tell me the story. Maybe she'll trust me enough to tell me the horrors she endured as she was kidnapped from Albania.
Right.
So he's like Voldemort then? Dumbass.
She's like, the gangsters are terrible people. They cut Bleriana's finger off. He's like, oh, like the scene in How High starring Method Man and Red Man where they cut off John Quincy Adams' finger and smoke it to get smart so they can pass their test.
Have you seen Brief Encounter? I'm trying to tell my horrifying story here.
But yeah, they do the whole thing of they talk a lot about Harry Potter because that was a books her grandmother read to her to help teach her English. So she E.L. James probably shouts out the only author in England that couldn't buy and sell. So
right. He also, because he's just has no ability to think outside of whatever experience was told him before, she says, Harry Potter, and he says, don't tell me she smuggled the books into Albania. It's like, not every book has to be smuggled. I said that there were some books that had to be smuggled in.
Right.
You can extrapolate from that that it's not every single book that ever existed.
Right. Yeah, there wasn't as much, things to stir up the masses in Harry Potter as there were in some of the other more political books you might have had a chance to smuggle into the country.
Yeah, whatever that author whose name we forgot. Never looked her up, by the way.
He does say, I can't begin to imagine this horror you've been through, and I'm so sorry. I wish he had had a comparison there as well. Like, he was like, yeah, like, I was DJing a full moon party in Bangkok, but the power went out in the middle of my set, and that was just so embarrassing. Like, there was all the hula hooping girls in bikinis had to stop for like 5 minutes as I found the patch cable. But like, I mean, yeah. So I have had some bad experiences, but no, not on this level, obviously. I mean, it was bad, but,
yeah. But we meet Oliver and I love he's a rich, fully drawn character as well. He reaches through the window. She smiles at him, and he says, I hope you've recovered from your ordeal. Is that something you'd say to someone who's like, look, this is my girlfriend. She was kidnapped from Albania and sold into sex slavery. Hey, how's it going? Hey, real bad luck about that sex slave stuff, huh? Hope you're feeling better. Right. Have a great day. Maybe yeah. Just not bring it up at all. Just say, nice to meet you.
Right, exactly. Yeah, you don't know what's going to trigger an episode. And, even I don't even know if Oliver knows about the sex slavery. He just might be talking about the assault and battery that took place within 24 hours.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. And we do learn that I forgot to mention earlier, she said that the bruise was fading. So she has the power of quick healing, too.
Yeah, she's
I mean,
she's
it was like
Wolverine.
A deep black bruise, and she said it's fading away. It's looking good.
Yeah, usually they're substantially worse on the second day.
Right.
We did gloss over this one, which was just a reaction that I didn't know what to make of. She's talking about Anatoly and says he's like a gangster. He's into organized crime. But she says, he is a powerful man. Rich. Really? My voice is dry. I hope to God that my bank balance is bigger than his. So it has no payoff or anything like that. Like, I think it might just be one of those seesawing things where he's... when the first time he learned that she had a betrothed, where he was all broken up about that, even though she had clearly fled the country in order to escape him. I guess he's thinking there that this guy might still have a chance if he has a little bit more money than him.
The Voldemort guy, yeah, she's gonna go back to him just because he does pretty well. So,
he makes more money than you, man.
Yeah, a few broken fingers, it's worth it.
But yeah, they get to the house and we get something that someone wrote in an email about last week, but she notices that the photographs that were hanging on the wall have disappeared. I guess the burglars were just they saw the erotic half-nude ladies and decided they would take them to decorate their own apartment. I'm not sure what they had any need for those were. But then she has the moment where she worries about the piano, I guess being hauled down the stairs or the elevator by the world's strongest burglars. But when we got to the piano, she sort of is sizing it up and got just a curious turn of phrase. Placing her hand on the ebony, she walks around it, stroking its sweeping curves. When she gets to the business end, she notices that his compositions are gone. And I just, the first time I ever heard like the business end being used not to refer to like, you know, the like an animal's butt or something. Like,
That's what Horowitz would say when he sat down at Carnegie Hall. Like, when I'm about to dig into the business end of this sad bastard. Is that okay with everyone?
So yeah, that's, I don't know. Could be a British thing. I don't know. But, after that, he goes and visits Carolyn. I guess he had left her in the apartment to fend for herself in a curious lapse in judgment as he has to go and try to patch things over with Caro.
Yeah, I don't understand that, but
he left her alone the first time. That's when the thugs were arrested, and I guess he figures that. Those were the only two people out to look for her. I don't know. Like, I also don't understand exactly why he needed to come visit her, but I guess he's been dodging her phone calls for a long time and feels the need to get it over with. But he walks in on her, and she's sort of sitting. She's sitting by the fire, staring into the flames, huddled in a tartan throw. She doesn't look around when I walk in, so she's like the when the real guy named the old Lebowski his wife has been kidnapped, and so he's sort of has taken up in the exact same position, like just sitting in front of a fire, brooding. That's what Carolyn is doing now.
Yeah, the view of it is so it's like I briefly dated a girl, a real theater girl. We were both in theater, but she was like very, you know what theater people are like, right?
Sure.
And when I broke up with her, I could tell she was going into a performance. But one of the things she did was she like turned her back 180 from me and like framed herself in the doorway and then looked back at me and was like, are you sure is this what you really want or something like that? And I was like, rolling my eyes, looking around at an imaginary audience. Like, what the hell is going on here?
She stepped in front of a fan to billow her hair. Like,
yes, this is what Caro is doing. She's putting on a performance here, yes. Clearly.
But she sighs. I'm sorry. I was just thinking about what Kit would be doing if he were here now. From nowhere, my grief emerges and smothers me like an itchy woolen blanket. So I was like, whoa, like out of nowhere, his grief emerges. Like, how is he going to process this? This is going to make it hard to brush off Caro. Like, how does he process it? I shrug it off. So that was a dramatic sentence, wondering how he would deal with his grief. That seems to be pretty much his grief episodes. They last about a sentence and then he's over them.
Yeah. It's to remind the audience. Oh, by the way, I'm deep.
Dead, you know? Brother. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they talk more about how she leans forward, so she's facing me, and in a conspiratorial whisper says, I think he meant to kill himself, which is something that Maxim guessed at earlier, but he sort of says, oh, no. But, again, just like Bleriana, we've got 50 pages to get to the bottom of this mystery, whether he killed himself or not. And, you know, 50 pages is generous because I think we've got to reserve at least 5 of those for like the final sex scene. So we've got a couple things to resolve here, and I don't have confidence in her being able to pull it off.
Yeah, well, after getting a bigger taste here of Caro, I am I'm fully on board with the Kit suicide theory, because here's one of her things. Maxim, she's your fucking daily, literally. And a dark cloud crosses her face. A storm is brewing. Like, yeah, I'd take my motorcycle out in the ice too.
Yeah.
And, just get it over with.
Yeah. Have a few nips of scotch and then just take it out into the iciest patch you can find. Yeah. Caro does not come across well here. She is she is very much the person that is, you're meant to, well, I'll just read you some of the words that he uses to describe her here, and we'll see if the listener also thinks that that he's making the right decision hooking up with Alicia instead. So we've got bitter, splutters, cackles, spits, hisses, contempt, grumbles. He says, God, she's so annoying, and then it's capped off with screeches. This is quite the portrayal of a nuanced individual here. A lot of levels to Carolyn's character here. Just a pure harridan.
And once again, why not lipstick on the teeth? That
would have yes, exactly.
capped it off.
Someone pointed out that this book, 450 pages in, she doesn't believe that this book authored by a woman has passed the Bechdel test yet. And this portrayal of Carolyn might emphasize that as being true.
Well, come on. She's got some hidden depth because he says about his burglary. No, they just took my laptop and my Dex. I think they smashed my iMac. Her response, people are shitty.
That is
oh, Cairo.
Pretty much a you're going to get that.
Well, I guess they do those things.
So he sort of says that he was in Cornwall escaping from gangsters. Gangsters, yes, and falling in love. So he's admitting that he's finally her suspicions were correct when she encountered her when they woke up that morning. Her response is I think a lot of people probably noted this one, but she says, Maxim, the only thing you love is your dick. I'm not sure if she hisses that or screeches it, but you have to assume it was one of them. but yeah, she's horrified by him saying that, you know, when she says she's your fucking daily and, you know, she spits every word out like venom. She's horrified. Horrified seems strong because it wasn't like he admitted that he was shacking up with the 17-year-old sex slave Bleriana. She's a consenting adult.
Yes. 23 years old.
But yeah, she's really upset by the daily. She says, don't give me some bullshit cliched homily. She's a grimy little freeloader. Can't you see that? He says, you know nothing about her. And she says, I know her type.
where's Cairo met this type?
Yeah, so she's just
Albanian sex slave.
So yeah, I mean, so I guess Cairo had a good background, but she is now the maybe she's just projecting. She is now the freeloader who might be evicted from the house because she has no right to the title anymore. So, but yeah, she's wasn't she like a wasn't she built up as being like a good lawyer, like one of those lawyers, the type who, since in fiction, all lawyers are bad except for the ones who are serving, you know, poor people type of thing. Isn't that what Cairo does?
Oh, yeah. So, I think that's true. Yeah.
So evidently, though, she just harbors these horrible grudges about her clients, these freeloading, right. moms who are, you know, stealing a loaf of bread to feed their starving children. She just hates them, even though she has to go and defend them. It goes against every bone in her body to do the public good.
But this do-gooding attorney is throwing wine glasses at the guy, screeching as she picks up an empty wine glass and hurls it at me. It hits my thigh and falls to the wooden floor. So I guess she was going for the meat and two veg there, I suppose.
Yeah, and that was provoked by him saying, we're not a good combination. We never have been. We had our chance, but you went off and fucked my brother. You claimed him and his title. I am not your fucking consolation prize. And so before she throws the glass, she gapes at me with horror writ large on her face. So yeah, that he sort of makes a perfectly reasonable statement, and this just is what pushes her over the edge. She just like he's like, no, listen, my brother, who by the way died less than a month ago, it was the person that you married. Like, you're not allowed to get upset at me for falling in love with someone else, regardless of how poor she is.
Right, but they were best friends.
Right.
So going off to screw her brother. His brother, I mean, not a big deal, right?
Yeah, no, it shouldn't be. I mean, it's, you could see how in the cliched fictional universe that we're getting at, she obviously still harbored feelings for him. But otherwise, it's a very weird relationship, and it's not acceptable to be, married to his brother while always being like, oh, well, sure, I'll fall back on him if it ever doesn't work out.
Right. Well, now we get... So that argument is over. We get a brief snapshot of Alicia going to a Tesco's or something for, I forget what she's going to make him food or something like that.
she explored the kitchen cupboards and drawers looking for something to cook for supper. She's not examined their contents in any comprehensive way before. So we just now that she's you know, in love with him, she can finally get comprehensive about what's in his cupboard. That's the real right. We've established this. So let's get comprehensive, baby.
Yep. So when she was wearing those pink panties and running the ostrich feather duster over it, she wasn't examining them comprehensively. But now she is.
Yeah.
So she goes to Tesco's, but she's a little bit afraid because in Albania, she would be wary of the djinn,
yes,
the demons that roam the earth after sundown.
Oh, yeah.
So that was the next sentence undercuts it, unfortunately, mm-hmm, because that was my favorite sentence of the book up until that point.
Yeah, she knows that is superstition. And I think that's I'm guessing this is probably something that E.L. learned on her second fact-finding trip to Albania. We read that article about how she had visited twice, and that was probably she probably learned about the djinn on the first one and then had to go back in order to really delve down deep into that superstition so she could mention it in one sentence here.
Yeah, I had heard of them before, but I took a dive to Fax King to see what the djinn were. Essentially, that's the genies?
Yeah.
That's the root of genies, I guess.
Yeah.
But I didn't know that genies were demons that roam the earth after sundown. But right, that's what they are. But yeah, she was wary of them.
Yeah, she's wary of them. I mean, there are guys who are threatening to break her fingers if she plays the piano, or her father, who is this horrible alcoholic who abuses her mother. But yeah, no, let's conjure up some bullshit things to be afraid of while we're at it. Life isn't miserable enough.
Right. But she does mention she's afraid of, she's jumpy after her encounter with Dante and Ely.
Yes.
She gets into the Tesco's and here he is, Anatoly Thachi.
Yes.
He is here, says her mind. Instead of just saying, no, not this guy, she says it in her head.
Right. So, and it, when he says, how have you been? It says, it takes a fraction of a second for her to realize that the calm, familiar voice is speaking in Albanian, which struck me as a very Kleinian type of her. She didn't realize he was speaking in Albanian. Like, a chill runs down my spine as my mind realized that the guy next to me was speaking in Albanian.
Right. Yeah. It takes a fraction of a second for her to realize that. I guess if you're aware of the processing of your own brain, I guess you could go, yeah, maybe that did take a fraction of a second.
But yeah, it could be just a sign that she's, you know, becoming more accustomed to being in England and speaking English to the mister. So maybe that's what it's supposed to get at. But no,
yeah,
I think just bad writing.
So we cut back to Maxim after post-argument, post-wine glass to the groin.
Or he's post-screeching.
Yeah, and he and his headmates are in quite a fight, calling each other dudes, made a bloody mess of it, lots of shits and whatnot, the usual stuff.
Yeah.
But then he also says, my mind's a mess. And that reminded me of this classic, I'll just play this clip of Winnebago Man.
a
family favorite of a guy who is obviously shooting ads for Winnebago, and these are the outtakes of it as he gets more frustrated. Here's a little snippet of it.
I got to read it again because my mind is just a piece of shit this morning. God, I can't fucking make my mind work. Tony, give me a towel for just a minute, please. That... I'm blinded by that fucking hot light. Goddamn son of a bitch.
So there you go.
Wow, yeah. For those of you that had Winnebago Man on your drop bingo cards, that is a unexpected victory, I would say, for you guys.
Yeah. It's a family favorite because when something my sons can't think of something, they'll say that. My mind is a piece of shit.
Well, yeah, his mind is a mess, and so you'd think that maybe a familiar sight might be able to straighten him out in this situation he's found himself in. But no, I scowl as I cross Oakley Street and stalk past the Mercedes-Benz garage. Even the familiar grace and beauty of the boy with the dolphin statue on the corner cannot lift my mood. So he thought he left a his best friend has screeched at him, thrown wine glasses, told him to like get out and never speak to me again. So that's got to be a devastating blow. And so he assumed that looking at a statue of a boy with a dolphin would improve his mood. So,
well, it's not far-fetched because we have learned the man is an idiot.
Yes, exactly.
He's a man-child. He's a moron.
Right.
He's clumsy. Intrapersonally, he's just awful. He's just mostly just horny and stupid.
Yeah, so you know, I guess he could have been like, oh, I was hoping to see a large dog wearing a small hat. That would right. That would lift my mood. I'm looking at the statue right now, and it is pretty stupid. It is a jumping dolphin, and then there's a naked boy holding onto its fin, sort of soaring like Peter Pan almost. So that was gonna write his ship, I guess. 1975. It's not even that old.
He was gonna snicker at the genitals of the naked boy. It's gonna make him feel better.
Yeah, but it's right out. It is. It's right outside a Mercedes-Benz dealership. So yeah. Shout out to everyone from Northern Virginia who might be thinking about at this exact moment about the Don Beyer Volvo, I think, statue of a guy feeding a bunch of pigs.
Nice.
So there's a pretty prominent car dealership with a equally stupid statue outside of it in Northern Virginia, Falls Church, I think. So if you're
just thinking of it, lightening your mood.
It
right
is.
Now.
I had a good weekend. I'm in a good mood, but next time I'm feeling down, I'm going to take that trip.
Say we get more. Speaking of Klein, we get more. Anatoly Thachi looms over her, bundled up in what looks like an expensive Italian coat.
Ooh, nice.
What it looks like. And then we get again, hello, Anatoly. Ghost.
Full Porky Pig.
There's four H's on that hello.
Wow. She's probably just startled by wondering if the rich guy is wearing an expensive coat as opposed to the garbage that he might opt to wear for no apparent reason.
And it doesn't say whether she says hello back to him in Albanian.
Huh. Maybe she has just not realized whether she's speaking Albanian.
It'll take her a fraction of a second.
that's chapter sort of ends on that note as he's getting ready to he's confronted her and Maxim is I think off to a bar to drink his sorrows away. But I'm ready to move on to 27 if you are.
Let me see. Do I have anything else? No, that's it.
All right. Well, chapter 27 starts with. Him at the bar. He's gone off. I thought he just had like an hour before he was going to meet back up with her, but he's opting to go. And since the statue didn't lift his spirits, he's going to go just pound some booze. But he's just worked up about Carolyn. He says, usually the only person who makes me this angry is my mother. Both of them are appalling snobs, as am I. Fuck. So we get introspective all of a sudden.
No, we get a full argument. And this this was so baffling to me. His headmates arguing with each other now. Both of them are appalling slobs. As am I. Fuck, I'm not. No. What will Carolyn say? And so I dove to the dark web again.
Dark. Woo-hoo-hoo. Getting dark.
I wanted to see if this universe was expanded. What's going on with these headmates? And of course, there's a whole well-developed set of characters made out of these. And so this is just one of the arguments that his headmates get into in the expanded Mr. Universe.
Right.
So let's give it a listen.
Sounds good. Usually the only person who makes me this angry is my mother. Both of them are appalling snobs. As am I.
Fuck!
I'm not!
No!
Who said that?
Calm down, mate. It's me, the voice in your head. I've been guiding you all along.
Shit.
Shit.
Wait, so you're not me?
No, bro. You're the mister, and I'm the other mister. You can call me Mr. Mister.
Oh, like the 80s band that anyone under the age of 50 has never heard of?
Who's that now?
Never mind. Hey, so are you in my head?
All the time.
Shit.
Shit.
Stop that!
K-Row! Shit!
I wasn't thinking about K-Row.
You are now.
Oh, shit!
Kill the queen!
What?
What?
What did you just say?
Me? You said it.
Did I?
Shit!
Shit!
How had I gone from nailing my daily to working up detailed plans to kill the queen?
It didn't make sense, and yet...
I've never been so glad that my father taught me how to shoot and handle guns.
Right.
I'd better have Jenkins load up the Range Rover with my shotguns and get to it.
Alicia, shit!
Bliriana, the queen!
Who was I thinking of again? Oh, right, the queen!
Better get to it.
I better get to it.
Now we're working together.
Mister, this looks like it could be the start of a beautiful friendship.
What is that? Is that from something? Take these broken
wings and learn to fly again. Yeah, so they, they turn into real characters there.
They are. They're, I was expecting him to say some, like, sort of go off the rails like a ventriloquist dummy, like, oh, don't say that about them. They're perfectly nice people.
My favorite way to insult people is holding a dummy and make the dummy say,
look at that fat bastard.
Now, cut that out.
There's a Facebook group for people. They talk about the podcast on there, and someone posted a variant of the Drake meme where he's like holding up his hand to say no, no, no. And he was saying no, no, no to the going on the dark web to order illegal drugs and order hits on your enemies. And then the thing that Drake was all about, he was holding it, he was smiling and nodding, was going on the dark web to research alternate universe audiobook productions of the book that you're currently reading. So I admired that. Good job to whoever made that.
That's a deep cut for everyone else on the planet, but it's good for us.
He's at the bar, and it's intercut with the bad guy leading. He sort of pulls her out of the grocery store, and she doesn't. Alicia is still reeling from his sudden appearance. Allows him to lead her out into the street. I thought that just a shrieking help might solve the problem. I'm not sure. I mean, it turns out he has a gun. I guess she's still worried about being in the country illegally in terms of attracting police attention. So that could be why she's not. Taking the most basic efforts to make sure he doesn't abduct her, but who knows?
I wondered at this point, given his speculation earlier about her, being kicked by Dante and Ile and all of that whole thing, and he said maybe she's horny just because of that. So I wondered right now, is she, is it go time right now in the middle of this violent encounter?
Yeah. Are you feeling scared or scared?
But yeah, we start to get a little color to Anatoly Thachi. I came a long way for you. I am not leaving without you. You are promised to me by your father. Why are you dishonoring him?
Yeah.
So, wow. Goes right to that.
Yes. I don't think that, the idea of dishonor once you've, fled the country in the back of a sex slave van is really going to hit too close to home. It seems like she's more concerned about her mother at this point in time, but, I guess I dishonored my dad, who's a colossal dick. Like, I'm good with that.
Go ahead and break my fingers. You're right. cut back to our friend who, instead of going home to the woman that he loves, who he knows is being hunted, he goes to the bar to have a Jameson.
Yeah.
And we get, I was surprised by this, the line right here is taken directly from a Jameson ad. I stand at the bar nursing a Jameson. The amber liquid sears my throat, but it calms the violent storm as it pools in my stomach.
That's from an ad?
That's an actual ad. I'll just roll it. I'll prove it here. Oh.
This is the drink of my father, and his father before that, and his father before that. Jameson, the amber liquid sears my throat, but it calms the violent storm as it pools in my stomach.
Yeah, so I don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg there, but there it is.
Yeah, that's sort of disingenuous on her part, taking that that powerful mental image from that ad and sort of passing it off as her own.
Unless maybe it's paid placement. Maybe she put it in there.
It could be. It's not very effective. I don't think that liquids pooling in your stomach or something I'd like to think about when I'm having a few, but you know, you never know. It is funny that he pretty much goes full Mr. Welch from It's a Wonderful Life when George Bailey insults his wife, and on Christmas Eve he goes straight to the bar just to his wife is upset and, you know, crying at home, and Mr. Welch is like, well, off to martinis, I'm gonna go punch somebody.
My favorite character in that movie, because he says as he yells at Bailey, like, I left her at home crying her eyes out because of what you said.
Really, sir?
Well, then what are you doing here?
She threatened
to hang herself. Well, you should probably head back there.
Well, it's $5 Marg night here, so you can't miss out on that. It's a great deal.
Gypsy Rose and the Gypsies are playing on that stage there. You think I'm leaving?
Kudos to Martini for opening on Christmas Eve.
The band is there in both universes, right? I think they just get a little more sinister in the alternate universe.
Oh, I've never noticed the band, huh?
They're doing that.
The whole thing is like, you know, it's a better atmosphere, frankly, at Martini's. It's people are having more fun, you know. It's like,
yeah, place is packed.
So after he's nursing his Jameson and calming the violent storm as it pools in my stomach, he thinks, I'm a fool. A priapic fool, which is a bold mental image there. I had to look it up. I'm not going to lie, but it's because I thought it was just a big $10 word, but it turns out that just means a perma boner. So
yes, priapism. Do you when you looked it up? This is slightly indelicate, but I don't know why I know this fact. Trust me, it's just probably one of those things you look up in junior high. You know what the solution to it is?
Yeah, a bunch of needles, right?
Incisions. Mm. Ooh. Anyway.
I opened it in a incognito browser. Of course. I had an inkling, and that's the best way to do all of these things, pretty much. I've got that keystroke command memorized.
Your Bleriana poop bucket tab is just wide open on your regular browser, though, isn't it?
Let's see what that result is. Oh, my God. But she says, I'm a priapic fool. She's right, though. I've never thought beyond my dick until Alicia. And then all that changed for the better. I've never met anyone like her, someone possessing nothing except her talent, her resourcefulness, and her beautiful face. And, like, at this rate of her building her up, the way that he is, I expect just, like, for her to, like, lay her hands upon a leper in the final pages and cure them just with her saintly beauty and all world kindness. Like, it's like, all right,
pick up your mat and walk. Yeah,
it is. It's like, all right, you know, someone who possesses nothing, except all worldly talent, smarts, and beauty. Ah, yes, a real ragged dick resourcefulness here of someone this talented and beautiful succeeding.
Well, he shows what a deep man he is by quoting, as good as it gets, is that what it is? A woman who wants to make me be a better man?
Great.
That is what that line is from, right?
Is it? I don't
know. You make me want to be a better man. I think it's like Jack Nicholson to someone Hunt. In that movie. Anyway.
It's from As Good as It Gets, and 40% of all terrible self-written wedding vows, I would guess.
Right.
As Good as It Gets wasn't a big priority for 17-year-old me to get to the box office and check out, believe it or not.
I can imagine that that's probably true. Yeah.
He says this was another word, the Jameson ad was something that was taken from real life. I'm always saying this. I hate arguing with Carolyn. She's my best friend. She has been forever. My world feels out of kilter if we're at loggerheads. And I say that a lot, just whenever I'm bickering with a friend, that being at loggerheads just gets me all out of
kilter. I hate that
we're
at loggerheads. I mean, I know I'm a priapic fool, but...
Yes. And that's, you know, that's really a screeching and throwing a drink at your crotch and, as the fire blazes dramatically in the background. That's a real loggerhead situation.
Right. So Anatoly drags her back to the mister's place.
His place, yeah. A curious decision on his part, I thought. because there's really no reason to do that. It could only, you know, probably only result in bad things for him if the guy happens to be home. I guess he does have a gun, but...
Yeah, he's that, the criminal in movies where they're just omniscient. They know everything. They know where to go. They walk calmly into situations that are obviously very dangerous.
Right.
That's Anatoly.
But yeah, it's a good thing we get there because we finally get some stuff from Act One, that really pays off in this scene. I was not expecting it to, but when they march inside, he marches inside. She stands in the hallway, frozen with panic. He returns moments later, holding the small wastebasket.
Yes, I wrote star of the whole book.
And this, he growls. Alicia manages to mobilize her features and screws her nose up in disgust at the condom in the trash. So that is full circle. And like, honestly, it shouldn't really be that difficult to mobilize her features and screw up her nose because she's always delighted by the lack of condoms in the trash.
Right.
So this should just be a natural reaction.
Yeah, this is her her previous, before she got together with Maxim, that is, yeah.
So she passes it off by saying that he has girlfriends over. She sleeps in the guest room. He believes this because I guess he is a omniscient villain, but also is an utter moron, which is par for the course, I suppose. But he essentially says, like, get in, you know, grab your stuff. You're going back to Albania with me. And she writes Maxim a note, a farewell note. She says she cannot write what she really wants to say. And then it gives us an example of what it would be, which is, thank you for protecting me. Thank you for showing me what love means. But I cannot escape my destiny. I love you. I will always love you until the day, Maxim, my love. P.S. Blirion is a hot piece. I won't be offended if you hit up her pimp in another year once she's a bit more acceptable society-wise to hook up with. So, I added that last part. That was not in.
That wasn't in.
That was not in the book. No, the stumble was not in the book as written. But yeah, so instead she writes him some more standard note, being like, going back to Albania with my betrothed. Peace.
Yeah, I love that he checks it over. And he says, good, that's yes. Good, let's go.
This sounds sort of callous. You don't want to, you know, you're not giving him your 2 weeks. You should probably be a bit more gracious in this note you have written. It sounds cold and, frankly, ambiguous for him to interpret later on in the book whether or not you actually liked him or not.
You want a recommendation? Then you write better note. there's a couple of Kleinian things here as they go out into the car. I think Maxim sees them, right? Yeah, he sees the red and black flag of Albania on it.
Mm-hmm.
But two Kleinian things. The man opens what must be the driver's door. later, she folds her arms and frowns with what seems like genuine concern.
Wow.
So just slipped into full Klein. It's this little passage.
Sure, I guess that's like... do they have drivers on the wrong side in England, he's getting into a foreign car in England, so he's not, I don't know, that's very stupid.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, who cares.
But yeah, so he's Maxim has just arrived, you know, so it's perfect timing as this as they're getting into the car, but I guess he doesn't see Alicia, but as he's like getting ready to sort of like, he notices the flag, he's going to save her. Carolyn shows up and runs up and is like, I was so stupid. Like, I'm so upset. And so we get again, the stupidest seesawing of the emotions because Alicia's looking out at Maxim, but then sees a fair haired woman run into his arms, hugging him. Who is she? He cradles her head. No, he holds her waist. Alicia chokes back a sob. This is where he has been. With Carolyn. And now they are hugging in the street and he's holding her. The betrayal is swift and cruel, slicing Alicia into tiny pieces and shattering her faith in herself and in him. And so, like, one, settle the hell down. Two, my, like, is this going to be happening, like, at the altar? As he's like, hugging his mother, like who walks him down the aisle, like, you know, at what point is she going to think that he does not stop loving her, you know?
Well, this is utterly absurd.
It's absurd.
It's his sister-in-law.
Yes.
She knows this.
Right.
She's saying it. His sister-in-law, his married sister-in-law.
Yes.
And his brother is dead. So what? So hugging your sister-in-law at that moment is the most natural thing on the planet.
Yes.
So you know this. You are not a moron. This is, what's her name? The author just trying to cram in something. She wrote herself into a place. She had no idea how to make this something
dramatic.
So she added this in and just, you know, shoehorned it in a way. It is so bad.
Right.
It makes zero sense.
Yeah. No, it's truly wretched because this, you know, one, she should be afraid for her life at this moment. Like, I mean, pretty much in the upcoming passages, she accepts her own death. But she's still, like, having this. It's only a soap opera. That's the only... only context in which this sort of misunderstanding has ever happened.
Yes, it is the back in college. I watched, people will remember, All My Children. Greg and Jenny was a classic. They could never get together, and there was, like, you know, 600 misunderstood hugs, overheard phone calls, just happening again and again and again. This is just one of those shoehorned into this.
Yep. As long as people don't behave like actual people, I guess it's possible.
Right.
But so he, and then he says, you know, fuck, I shout as the dread spawns dark and deadly in my gut. Dread, dark and deadly in your gut is a lot worse than Jameson pooling there, I would say.
Right.
Abandoning Caroline, I race up the street only to see the car disappear into the distance. Shit, 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 not again. I grab my hair with both hands, helpless, completely helpless. So he really sucks in that respect. And just the idea of not again is a very funny thing to to have happened. It's like, well, yep, you left her. You left the victim within 24 hours of her being kicked in the ribs. So, yep, I would say it's a little bit on you. And then he goes inside and he reads the actual note that she left him. It says, Mr. Maxim, my betrothed is here. He is taking me to my home in Albania. Thank you for everything, Alicia. And he says, for the second time in less than a week, I want to cry. So he now experiences the exact same type of seesawing where it's like she didn't say anything about, like, you know, she's leaving with her betrothed. She must have willingly gone back with him. That's the conclusion that he draws about the that she's just sort of turned around and doesn't love him anymore.
So stupid. The man is an idiot. For those who don't, this is a writing term and a writing mistake that she makes here. This is called a repeated beat. And if you had that in a script, a script supervisor would say, get rid of that repeated beat, you moron. But she hangs a lantern on it, to use another term, for the second time in less than a week.
Yeah.
Pointing out her own crappy writing, she's proud of it. She has the character go, no, again? This? Pretty improbable, isn't it, folks? Like, yes, it is. You should have taken it out.
Right. And that has happened before of him saying, like, I have the same tattoo as your flag. What are the odds? It's like, yeah, you really are hanging a lantern on how improbable and pointless that is.
Right.
And so what is the what was the first time he wanted to cry? Just when he saw her bruised on the floor after the guys had kicked her?
He's had, emotional responses that are way over the top of crying before. He's been shattered on the inside.
Right,
and his guts are boiling and my head is exploding. And
he's thinking about Kit's shenanigans on the drums and saying, fuck. But I guess that's not warranting of crying, thinking about his dead brother. But I don't know.
Yeah, I bet if we look back, I think he's wanted to cry more than that. I'm sure he has. But... unreliable narrator.
All right. Well, that's it for that. That sort of ends on the cliffhanger of him reading the thing. We can move on to chapter 28. We would normally stop and do some fan fiction here, but I scolded people last week about not writing fan fiction that would fool you.
Right.
And last week actually was probably the best one yet. Mine was the only one that did not fool you, that fooled you. Sorry, that did not fool you. But then people sort of took me up on that, and people wrote even more absurd fan fiction this week.
A lot of Bleriana?
A lot of Bleriana showing up. Bleriana is a cyborg. Bleriana is ends up murdering Maxim type of thing. Like, so we're not doing any fan fiction this week. You need wow. to write. You need to write stuff that will has a chance of fooling Mike. This is not a open mic to read these absurd scenarios. So I mean, we got some that were funny. I will admit that, but none of them are going to fool you. So we'll try it again. We'll try it again with a new book.
Connor, tough love.
Hey, you
tough
know,
love for our listeners.
Just because you send me something does not mean I'm going to read it. So
laying down the law.
Hey, it's what we got to do. It only works when you're aping the mechanisms of the person. If Bleriana is parachuting out of the sky with a machine gun, this is not going to work, folks.
Boy, the people at home listening to this are going, shit, not reading it. Fuck.
Look, I
my
will.
My head, my tongue lolled in my head. My blood boiled.
I will post some of the. Some of the fanfics that I opted not to read to Patreon, and you can see if they would have if I erred in judgment by not reading them.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Look, you know, you gotta lay down the law every now and then. This is not what we came here to do.
Oh, we're all very chagrined. All right, let's move past that unpleasantness.
Yes.
Of Connor's screaming and ranting.
Yes, I'm screeching. I'm throwing wine glasses. I'm a shrill harpy. So he says, I think the woman I want to marry has just been kidnapped. Marry Carolyn blanches. Yes, fucking marry Carolyn. So she blanches at him wanting to marry the woman that he's already admitted he loves, and not a human being has been kidnapped, because she doesn't know anything about how Alicia came here. She doesn't know that she was a former sex slave or has been assaulted within the past 24 hours by two thugs. So she's just blanching at all the wrong things.
Well, we get his best outrage here. Kara, she didn't leave of her own free will. I have to get her back. Fuck. I storm past Carolyn, head into my drawing room. Fucking hell. What now? I don't have a working fucking computer. Also, the love of my life is probably being tortured right now.
I installed Bonzi Buddy and its spyware just took over. So every time I open the browser, it redirects to a toolbar that I don't even remember accepting. But gah, it's just not working the way it should be. Got Windows 7 installed because I neglected to upgrade when they were giving Windows 10 away for free.
Sounds like it's striking close to home.
That
it sure
is
for me.
Striking close for home, goddamn.
Yes.
It's very frustrating. Carolyn closes her eyes. This was good. This was sort of the transformation in the shallow character. It's either all or nothing with these guys. Carolyn closes her eyes and tucks her hair behind her ear. When she opens them, they are steely blue with resolve. So she's doing the pass your hand down in front of your face to erase your smile type of thing. So right. Carolyn's now firmly back on board. She knows people in the immigration department. So she's going to be she's going to help him again, because deep down she was his best friend.
Yes. And then we cut to Anatoly and Alicia, and we get some of this great. You know, he's supposed to be evil, but I'm starting to warm to him after this exchange right here. She says, I was smuggled into this country by some men who took my passport. And his response, smuggled? Men? So I like his little comedy bit in the middle of all of this.
Yeah. Right before that, I don't have a passport. What do you mean you don't have a passport? Why, Alicia? Tell me. He goes full Wazo. Did you forget to pack it? I don't understand. So he's rock stupid as well. In this, he doesn't understand why she would have left. I mean, I guess it's sort of it could be just him gaslighting her, but he really doesn't know why she would have tried to flee him.
Yeah, but she stuffs her in the trunk. He says, you may get cold. I don't know if the heating works in there. Go back to sleep and be quiet. And I just thought, Anatoly, I think you know the heater doesn't work in the trunk. I don't know. I know you're from Albania and there's a lot of gin on the streets at night. But you know that there's no heat in a trunk.
That does seem like the kind of feature that, you know, the first time a friend of yours got a really nice car, he's like, yeah, check it out. You know, got the full package, heated trunk. And you're like, you bite your tongue because you don't want to be like, well, he's proud of this. I don't need to quiz him on how often he's going to use the stupid heated trunk.
Yeah. Oh, Anatoly, you are a wonder.
We got a good thing. She's still just ping-ponging. She stares unseeing out the car window, drowning in tears she cannot stop. They flow freely as grief shrouds her misery. Maxim and Caroline. Caroline and Maxim. What she experienced with him all a lie? I just don't know how someone could possibly think this, as we've covered. And then she says, maybe she can escape in Europe. Maybe she can choose how she dies. She closes her eyes and drifts into her own version of hell. So she's a real drama queen at this exact moment. Her own version of hell.
Yeah, what do you think her own version of hell would be?
It's like the Sorcerer's Apprentice, or like Stregonona's porridge bowl when Big Anthony cast that spell. Instead of porridge pouring out of it, it's just a trash can that keeps overflowing with condoms.
Yeah. I think it's a world with where you're always belted in a seatbelt, no vacuum cleaners, right. No amusing vacuum cleaners, and the sea doesn't exist.
Right. It's you go to install the Sonos firmware update, but it just keeps spinning. It's like a Sisyphean firmware update for the Sonos, so you can never play KYX.
99% for all of eternity on the progress bar.
You're lying down with like a clockwork orange thing strapped to your face, and all you can see is the bucket that Bill Barion is sitting in front of, which is positioned like 3 feet above your head.
It's Bleriana's bucket is put on your face like the rat mask in 1984.
All right. This is a... all right. So we've got a fan art challenge for everybody.
I assume Bleriana's bucket is a band already.
Oh yeah, they're Norwegian church burning metal. But yeah, so if you're able to draw that a Hieronymus Boschian vision of Alicia DiMache's own personal hell.
Yeah. Oh boy, I can't recover from Bleriana's bucket here, but we have to march forward.
Oh yes, where are we? I got distracted.
It gets to my favorite saying in all of Albania. And I assume it's true. Her knowledge has been spot on. It has been fact-kinged to hell and back.
Mm-hmm.
A woman is a sack made to endure.
Yes. I wanted that on a needlepoint sampler.
Oh, that is wonderful.
So yeah, what does it mean? Let's parse it.
I just have it written out here, and I'm trying to find the context of it. Do you have it in
he
your...
He is quoting from the ancient canoe of Lek Dukagjini, the primitive, which I don't need to go any further. I don't need to explain to you, but for the mouth-breathing reader, she lays it out. The primitive feudal code that governed the mountain tribes in the north and east of her country for centuries. So the west and south were just lawless, but Canoon of Luke Dukagjini came into the north and east. Was like, settle down, warring feudal tribes. We're instituting some rules here. He came down with the tablets like Moses, and number one was, a woman is a sack made to endure. Because when I think of resilient objects and materials, things that can endure a heavy burden, I guess a sack is my top one.
Well, they were also known for making incredibly durable sacks in the north and eastern part of her country. But in case you're wondering, is he a good guy? You know, is he saying that, like, is he stroking her cheek and comforting her and saying, a woman is a sack? No, he snarls it with a cruel glint in his eye.
Ah, a woman is a sack made to endure.
And this is a moment after he has slapped her across the face, choked her and squeezed, and she managed to gasp out, this is why I don't want to marry you. that might be an eye-opening moment for several people, but some people might take the hint before it even gets to that moment, but who knows?
Yeah, so they go to a hotel?
Yeah, they go to a cheap motel, and I guess they crossed over to France at some point in time. So because she was like, this is how I'm going to die, somewhere in France with this, you know, gross guy on top of me.
Right. And then they have, oh, here it is. Okay. I was looking for a great conversation. I'm just taking out all the extras again and just giving you the raw dialogue.
Okay.
We should have had our troop come in.
Oh, man.
But you flew them to the south of France on our money, so they are unavailable.
Keep the customers satisfied, I have to say.
He says, "Your face is a mess. Go and clean yourself up." And whose fault is that? Just do it. Are you hungry? Take off your coat, Alicia. I do not want to fight with you. I am tired. It's warm in here. Tomorrow we will go back out into the cold. Please take your coat off. I like you in jeans. Here, you must be thirsty. It's almost midnight. We should sleep. Ah, Carissima, I should have made you mine after that stunt you pulled outside. You are so beautiful, but I don't have the energy to fight you. And I think it would be a fight, yes? That's a complete series of dialogues.
The neighbor's got the a water glass to the door and is listening in, being like, I think they are absolutely maniacs next door.
Yes. I did not follow a word of that.
That was a good performance. You should ask the players if they'll have you. I can put you in touch with their manager if you're interested in an audition.
Oh, do you think so?
Yeah, you'd pay
really?
Pay him off, and he might put it on the top of the stack.
Well, I'm so I don't know what to say.
I am the manager, so that would be
I'll after this is over, I'll talk to him and see what we can do.
I do like she was happy to note that there was she breathed a sigh of relief when they entered the motel. There are two beds, not one, two. So she was to reemphasize that there are the same number of beds as there were stoves in the kitchen that the dogs were in. So that was a
look, Connor. He is a man of honor who lives by the Lek of Ku Klok or whatever. the canoon of Lek du Kangji. Yes. So this is a noble man,
right? But so she's not. You know, he's Maxim has made her be like the queen of all women, but she's. I noted she was not exactly like Sansa or Arya Stark in the face of trouble. She's not Little Miss Resilient here. She says there are vivid red marks in the shape of his fingers. Tomorrow they will be bruises. But what shocks her most is the lifeless eyes staring back at her from beneath swollen lids. She is dead already. So she's not, you know, there's no spark of fight or like, you know, she's not making the revenge list like Arya. It's just like, all right, well, had a good run. And I guess that's we're meant to believe that is because she feels she's been betrayed by seeing him hugging his sister almost as much as the slapping and choking. But, it sort of made me disappointed in her.
Yeah, she didn't have time in the heated or maybe not heated trunk to just think, you know what? It is his sister-in-law. It's probably nothing. I'll kick this guy in the balls as soon as I can and fly out into the car. And yeah, it's never occurred to her. She's just like, this is over.
Yeah. I didn't care for Kill Bill. Good soundtrack. Didn't really care for the message of empowerment and revenge.
Yeah. Well, she has another side to her that annoyed me is that she's like quickly gone from being the coy farmer's daughter holding a cream pitcher to like a wisecracking sitcom character.
Oh, yep. I noted that as well.
You awake? She responds, sadly, it would appear so. So suddenly she, you know what I mean? She's just at one moment, she's like putting a finger in one of her dimples and giggling coyly. And the next she's doing, a B. Arthur from the Golden Girls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She's very much like, Stephanie Tanner or something, just like, you know, or Daria quipping about these things. There was one later that was, she says, I didn't know you could be this disagreeable. And she goes, I'm just getting started. And then he says, brings her food at a rest stop. And he's like, I cannot believe I am serving you. Eat. She goes, welcome to the 21st century. She retorts, folding her arms in active defiance. So yeah, she's saying these things at the studio audience. She's going, ooh.
Yeah, welcome to the 21st century. Oh man, he breaks her fingers immediately. I have my wedding vows here.
Oh, all right.
Because you are an angry, violent man, Mike. Why would I want to spend my life with you? I don't have the energy for this conversation. Get into bed. That was our wedding vows to the word.
You didn't say anything about how you make me a better man. That's disappointing. I thought that this was funny. Credit where it's due, just because it was in sort of a Borat kind of way. But He's like looking at her in her jeans. I think that you read that line. I like you in jeans. She feels like a prize sheep on the auction block as he appraises her. I just thought that was a good, funny little window into her Albanian upbringing. Prize. She's observed a lot of prize sheep being auctioned off in her 23 years.
And she feels like what she's seen there. Yeah. here's a good, this is a good physical thing. You know how we've talked in the past. She doesn't have the best grasp on the way people bite lips or do things or how they grab other people. And this is another one. She hears something. Alicia is too warm and someone is murmuring in the background. She cracks one eye open momentarily, bewildered as to where she might be. When you're woken up suddenly by something, do you crack one eye open?
Yeah.
Do you have the, so you wake up, but you don't open your, you have the wherewithal to go, no. Keep them closed. Only crack open one eye.
I'll be fair here. I do that, but I am a Bugs Bunny.
yes,
I'm a cartoon kid who's trying to at a sleepover trying to see if their dad is going to come down and yell at them. So I do crack one eye open,
okay.
And then it sort of it crawls out of my eye and like looks around on its own and then retracts back on the on
course.
The retina. I put a title on what they've both been suffering from through this entire story, because she's, I think this must be when she's cracking the eye open. She stares into the darkness and wishes it would swallow her up. Her tears refuse to fall. She's all cried out. What is Maxim doing? Is he missing me? Is he with Caroline? She sees Caroline in Maxim's arms as he holds her close, and Alicia wants to scream. So I realized that what the problem is that they both lack relationship object permanence.
Right.
So they're like a baby who, when you play peekaboo, it completely goes away. So if you're not consistently, actively being told I love you and then having sex with someone, you have to just assume that you are scum in their eyes. It's not a very healthy way to go about your life. It's a boning peekaboo syndrome.
It must be a developmental thing, right?
Uh-huh.
Where it's just a missing piece from them. Maybe it has to do with her synesthesia.
It could be.
I don't know. Somehow related. She has the inability to see a relationship, and then, you know, it's an Oliver Sacks thing. She sees a relationship and she sees a hat instead or whatever. I don't know.
Right. And Maxim's is probably just, his mother must be to blame for this, unable to form. Just her leaving her father for a younger man must have been where it was stunted in his own emotional development. So, yeah, I think we finally have pinpointed what is going on with him. Doesn't make it any more relatable or easy to read, but...
No, but she finds a new purpose, and which is what? It's that her mother and father seeing them? Her mama, I guess.
Yeah. Her mom was the good one in this situation. So I think at some point in time, this guy says something, it's like, what about your mother? And then it's like, his eyebrow raises. He's detected the chink in her armor. Like he knows what to do. And it's like, well, okay, sure. Since this is the way it works, he's discovered that this is the way he can finally emotionally manipulate her.
And the chapter ends with a thrilling, her briskly towel drying her hair, which I'm glad it's in there because, I mean, there's so much of it. So this chapter, it's like another hour of her towel drying her hair, I assume.
Yes. That's them leaving the motel room?
No, they don't leave.
Okay.
That's the end of the chapter. She just, but she vows to get back to Maxim.
Yes, that's it. So it's, well, she vows to get back to Maxim, but it says she's towel drying her hair and she feels a new sense of purpose. She will get back to Maxim and see for herself, see if everything they shared was a lie. So that's her motivation now, is just to confront him about him hugging his sister-in-law. It's not like love that's motivating her. It's not self-preservation. It's just this idiotic belief that he's been lying to her as he bared his soul for the past 72 hours.
Which will quickly be over, the same way it was when he lied to her about being a baron or a lord or whatever he is.
Right.
You know, where she's just like, oh, okay. All right.
Let's have sex.
Right. She's upset. And then, you know, he sees that. So like from beyond his back, he produces a vacuum cleaner with a face on it. And it's like, well, problem solved. The grin just creeps under her face like it would in a cartoon as well.
Right. So that's all I got for that chapter.
Yeah. Then we move on to, I think, what was the last one? I guess I stopped taking chapter notes, but they are cruising along. He's taken her to the truck stop and stuff. We finally get a real description of Anatoly.
Anatoly Thachi.
And so it's interesting. His complexion is fair, betraying his northern Italian roots. His nose straight, his lips full, and his blonde hair, uncommon in her town, is long and unkempt. So I was like, I immediately was like, so he's Fabio?
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Very bizarre. Like, you know, because the other two thugs were just like, you know, the scum of the earth, you know, like they're like.
His yellow teeth were sharpened to a point. His one eyebrow ran across his both eyes.
Yeah, bloodshot with pink eye and his cleft palate, like, you know, pus oozed out of his ear.
His one swollen knee caused him to swing his wooden leg, you know.
Yes, yes. The hook hand. But yeah, so this guy is a good-looking guy, I guess, even if his hair is slightly unkempt, but that's just because he's driving his sweet car with a top down on the Autobahn.
Yeah, I imagine Fabio or the main villain in Die Hard. Mm. Remember that guy? He was, long blonde, greasy hair and a cruel twist to his lip, eyes that are piercing and cold.
Yeah,
that's what I picture.
So yeah, this is where they do the quipping about 21st century. We go back to Maxim, who says, "I've been in a state of high anxiety since Alicia was taken from me. Maybe she went with him willingly. Maybe she's changed her mind about us. I don't want to believe that, but doubt is creeping into my mind." And it's just, I'm banging the table at this time thinking, how, after everything she told him about this man, that he could just like have that switch flipped all of a sudden is... But I guess it's the developmental disorder.
Remember, he's a moron. it's something we are, you know, you keep, you attribute to someone things that you can't imagine, you know.
Sure.
So he's a moron, but you don't see things that way, so you can't imagine him doing it,
right.
But he is.
You need to use, Occam's razor for morons, where that is the simplest explanation. That he is a moron is going to be the correct one. There's nothing deeper to him, nothing more complex.
Before we get to that, we passed over a couple things that I had noted. I know this is a joke, but still, she says about him, he was well-traveled, and she'd listened rapt to his stories of Croatia, Italy, and Greece, these faraway places. So, yes, I know she's sheltered and everything, but it was a weird place for her meta joke there.
Right.
Greece is 100 miles away from Albania. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, anything with the sea is pretty much is a fantasy world for her. So,
yes.
What else? He is so Maxim is making an effort to get to her in Albania, essentially his goal is to find her and see if anything is a lie. I mean, he wants to save her, but now this doubt has crept into his mind. So they are flying out. He's upset. He says it's annoying that they're unable to charter a plane. Yeah, I think he describes that as annoying. So they are flying out commercial the next day on, and so they found themselves in the British Airways lounge, where
right.
So he has this sentence, which was one of my favorites in the whole book. To distract myself from my unsettling thoughts, I snap and upload a few photos to my Instagram. Once that's done, I think back over the morning's events. And so this is, so we have not heard anything about his social media habits or anything like that. I had to do a control F to see if it had been mentioned in the book. It was not. Michael, Magda's son, had been using Instagram. That was the only mention of it we got. But I, like you, was curious if this world had been fleshed out at all.
Ah.
So, yeah, I fired up VPN, fired up the Tor browser, and went a looking. I hired a hitman. Once I was done with that, I found this scenario, which had been flashed out on the dark web.
Oh, it really?
Yeah, it was Don.
Well, that's good for the podcast. I'm glad you found it.
It is. the hitman I hired to kill my brother on a motorcycle accident. Well, less said about that, the better. But
yeah, I'll edit that out.
I did find a thank you. I did find a 2-minute comedy sketch, so it's all worth it. Let's listen.
Oh, excellent. All right,
mute that thing, man. It's gonna drive me nuts.
Sorry, but wait, no way.
What did you see?
It says that Maxim posted a pic to Instagram.
Maxim? Oh, I forgot he even had an Instagram.
No, he hasn't updated it or even alluded to its existence in like a really long time. Another one.
Gee, well, check it out. If he's breaking his silence, he must be up to something incredible.
Okay, let's see.
What's he doing? Foam party in Ibiza? DJ tent at Coachella? Oh, maybe he's on a yacht in the Maldives with Kanye.
It's a picture of an electrical outlet.
A what now?
Hey, British Airways, would be nice if at least one of these USB outlets in your lounge worked so I didn't have to fish out my entire charger, get it together, eye roll emoji.
Huh. Well, maybe the other pics he posted are less mundane?
The next one is a tray of cheddar cheese cubes next to a crock pot.
Oh, okay, yeah, it must be something super decadent. Oh, I bet it's lobster bisque.
Let me see, zooming in, vegetable minestrone.
Not quite as decadent.
Please take just one packet of oyster crackers per bowl of soup.
Sounds like he is in a pretty crappy lounge.
No, he seems to be enjoying this part of it. Love a good bowl of soup. 2 exclamation marks, really?
Has someone got his phone?
No, he posted a selfie.
Let me see that. Okay, yeah, half his face is blurry and he caught the bartender mid-blink.
Why is he posting these terrible pics?
Yeah, this is story material, if anything. It's certainly not main feed worthy.
That's the backlit refueling truck out of the lounge window. A napkin balanced on his leg with 3 cheddar cheese cubes and a toothpick on it. A cappuccino machine with a handwritten out-of-order note taped to it. Gah!
Oh, a man with his cheeks stuffed full of nuts?
This is the most boring day ever Instagrammed.
Yeah, unfollow him.
Don't have to tell me twice. There.
Okay, all right, go to my favorite account.
Okay, at Henry Hoover Means.
Oh, yeah, that's more like it. Oh, look at that little guy.
TFW, you have a lot of vacuuming to do, but you don't mind.
That's so true. Oh, and look at that one. Drake doesn't want the Dyson. Oh, but then he sees Henry and he's all like, oh, yeah, that's the one for me.
Maxim really sucks, doesn't he?
He sure does. He really, really does. So yeah, about as about what you'd expect from someone in an airport lounge, I guess. Those buddies
nailed Maxim's character, his insipidness and everything. It was well portrayed.
But yeah, so I think it's sort of a hello fellow kids moment, but it is very difficult to make. You know, even though it's something everybody does, using a computer, using social media is something that just sticks out like a sore thumb anytime you read it in a book or see it in a movie. And it's always going to seem probably dated almost the moment that you see it.
Yeah, I mean, he should have, updated his or checked on MySpace to see if his band got any more downloads
right,
or something.
Exactly. I mean,
it's just going to look terrible. What a stupid thing to put in there when... Completely unnecessary, right. Obviously.
Yeah, it was not needed at all. And the idea that snap and uploading a few photos in this horribly mundane setting is something that this Playboy millionaire would do is it's hard to imagine.
Because then it turns and goes right to this. He's talking about he's going to give her a ring. He's going to ask her to marry him. And he says, over the centuries, my ancestors have amassed quite a haul of fine jewelry crafted by the most prominent artisans of their day. When the collection is not on loan to museums around the world, it is safely stored in the bowels of Belgravia. I just thought, I please tell me he pulls that out when he's DJing and says, let's get some artisan handcrafted jewelry up in this piece.
Yeah.
So he's Instagramming at one moment and then talking about his museum collections of handcrafted jewelry.
Right. Yeah, he's like, yeah, well, we got to keep it down there because there's a, oh boy, there are some African countries that would really like to have that stuff my ancestors stole back. And that is not, we are not willing to do that at this point in time. They, I mean, they make a good case, but I mean, it is quite valuable. So no, we won't be returning any of those looted artifacts. And then, yeah, the idea that he finds her a ring and he talks about how many carats it is and how much it's worth and then says, I hope she likes it.
Yes, if all goes to plan, she'll return to the UK wearing it. And I thought, you know, I give my wife a book about Dean Martin and I hope she'll like it. I don't think there's going to be an issue right. with your platinum and diamond Cartier.
Right.
Oh, gosh, golly, golly, gee, I hope she likes it. Idiot.
Yeah, she's like, well, I don't like material things. I would have liked one of those ring pops that, you know, you suck on that you get from the ice cream man. That's what... But then the I think the dark web guys touched on this, but just, you know, we probably need to hear it just fully the way it was described in the book. I pat my pocket yet again, checking that the ring is safe, and scowl at Tom, who's stuffing his face with nuts. So Tom, his green beret, whatever that equivalent of is in the Royal Army, is just like absolutely going to town on the nut bowl from the buffet.
Well, yeah, because it says Tom loves an adventure. It's why back in the day he joined the army.
Yeah.
And one of the adventures he likes is to see how many nuts he can get into his mouth.
It was
without spitting hazelnuts across the room.
I was when we went to Costa Rica a couple of years ago over December. I was looking for an adventure. So I had it narrowed it down to joining the Costa Rican army or going ziplining. So I opted for ziplining.
Sure.
And I think now that I make that statement off the cuff, they probably are one of the only countries in the world that doesn't have an army. I think that's one of their
There is no standing
tourist
army.
Points. But anyway, so good thing I chose ziplining because that would have been very embarrassing. I would have truly been an army of one. Thank you. That's been it for the podcast then. We appreciate everyone listening.
There's a big red plug in the wall that we're just going to yank on right now.
The plug has a smiley face plugged into it, though. So when the plug is its nose like that, it's little Henry Hoover.
I have just a couple of stray ones, but it's going back a little bit.
Okay.
But I will confess that there was a little bit of melodrama that kind of, I mean, you know, it got to me a little bit. Where she's musing, she thought maybe she could break the cycle of violence that beset her mother. So I'm like, oh, that's sad. That's right. Her father is abusive. But it was her mother who'd found her while she lay curled up, sobbing and trembling on the floor. I don't want you to go through your life with a violent man. They'd wept together. And, you know, that little moment kind of got to me.
Oh, wow.
And then two lines later, she's like, now here she is with him. So she's back to B. Arthur, you know, and I'm thinking, like, you had one little chance to, like, tug at my heartstrings, and then she goes back to just being like, welcome to the 21st century, a-hole.
Right.
Like, so quickly dissipates any sympathy I have for this character.
Yeah. You want your eggs scrambled or fried? Well, the kitchen's that way.
Right. But I did learn also that her violent, abusive kidnapper can be pretty funny. Because with his mouth full, he looks both absurd and ridiculously pleased with himself. So much so that an involuntary snicker escapes from Alicia.
Wow. All right. Yeah.
She is warming to him. He's a funny dude.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is funny to imagine Fabio with his mouth full. Maybe he's stuffed his face full of nuts. I don't know.
Full of nuts. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that's all my, that's all I got from the middle of chapter 20.
Yeah, we sort of abandoned it halfway to just not do too much. But yeah, so for the rest of the time, we're just going to finish the book and we're going to see. Let's take odds. You know, if you're a betting man on a scale of 1 to 10, odds that odds that they end up together at the end of the book.
Odds that they end up together 100%.
100%, yeah. Are they going to get married 90% or just
100%?
Going to get a wedding in the book, you say 100%. I'd say 85. I don't, they might like be, maybe it ends with him about to walk down the aisle or something. Odds that Anatoly survives the rest of the book.
0%.
Okay. Odds that we get resolution to the sex trafficking gang and that Blariana has a happy ending.
I think the odds are high. Okay. I think your Armada guess is going to be closer to what it is because, again, yeah, there's not much time.
Okay. All right. I think that is, yeah, that probably does it for the plot. We're going to finish the book for the next time. We do have...
Wait. I have one more guess. I want you to guess.
Yeah.
Tom, dead or alive?
I guess there's a slight chance. I mean, he gives his life to these thugs. I'd say that 80% chance he's alive. Or, wait, undiagnosed nut allergy. I'm dropping it down to 50%. And otherwise, why would you have such a jarringly out of nowhere statement like that? Or maybe people see on Instagram that he's hanging out with them in the lounge and serial killers track him down because they have a grudge from his army days.
Two more. Jenkins? What becomes of Jenkins?
I am guessing we do not hear about him or the two ladies or the hounds. I'd say if we hear about anyone, it's going to be the hounds. They're going to adopt them and lead them to city life.
Mrs. Beckstrom.
any 40%, 40%. And Heracles.
Oh, yes.
I think there might be maybe she's at the wedding if it happens. 40% for her. I'd say 20% that the rest of the crew from the manor show up.
Yeah, okay. All right. And we already speculated about Bleriana, so.
I mean, if her name had been, you know, Helen, it would not have been 20 times as funny. It's just the fact that that is a name I've never heard, and it sort of is one that you sort of can belch out is very funny to me.
I'd like to end the show with calling Bridget in here and live getting her reaction when I tell her she's like a sack made to endure. I wish we could get that reaction live, but it's probably too complicated.
Yeah, a hidden camera thing, maybe for a Patreon thing.
Yeah.
let's do some... We got one email. Let's do that email.
We're going to the party. We're going to the game. We're going to the disco. We're going to cruise out, man.
All right, our first email was from Dominic. He gets into some the root of a popular term in this book. He says, seems like Ernest Cline and E.L. James were not being unoriginal, but were working deep within the rich linguistic tradition of English when they both used the phrase, fuck a duck. He links then to a direct quote from the 1811, that's the year, 1811, Dictionary of the Vulgar Tongue. And it has an entry for duck fucker, the man who has the care of the poultry on board a ship of war. So it has a rich tradition of, I guess, a naval term.
Wow. Okay. Newfound respect.
He put a link to that, so we'll post that on the usual places. Another thing that I posted this week, a listener from Thailand wrote in and... sent a link to some article that I could not make heads or tails of because it was in Thai, but the gist of it seemed to be that there is a river somewhere in Thailand that is just overflowing with condoms. It's like backed up, and so there is just this. There's lots of pictures on it, so I posted that. Got horrified reactions, but it was a. He said he could only imagine what Alicia's reaction would be if she were to encounter that, and it would probably be the same as all of us. It was pretty gross.
That's disgusting.
Thanks for sending in emails. We would love to, as we finish the book, as we wrap up next time, let us know what your final thoughts are, because we would love to hear if there's anything that we have missed or didn't touch on as we wrap up the mister. But for now, let's read our dumb sentences of the week.
A sentence begins with a capital letter. A capital letter is a letter that's big. A capital letter is not a small letter. A capital letter is big, big, big. A sentence ends with a period.
All right, what do you have?
All right, we have a lot of dumb sentences. A lot of these were sent in by our Patreon supporters, which is a very fun group of people. We are pushing 400 Patreon supporters. We are getting up there. It is
woo-hoo.
In theory, could happen in the next week or two. But we will be happy when that happens. We should think of something to celebrate once we hit that mark. But it's at patreon.com/372pages. It's a lot of fun. Get every episode early and join these fun folks. First sentence is from Brendan. His sentence was, she's like a statue petrified by some natural disaster. which I did not pick up on, but it is a...
I didn't either. Wow, what does that mean?
He says it's not... I'm not sure what's worse, the idea of a statue being petrified further by a volcanic eruption, or the fact that she thinks there could be other natural disasters that petrify things, which is a very good point. So she's talking... He's talking about, like, Pompeii or something like that.
Yes.
But, yeah, usually it's people who you think about that, fossilized or petrified. It's not a a stone statue that was already petrified.
Right. By the way, did you hear that I saw some special on it, that the Pompeii, you know, the famous mother cradling a child and all of the people posing with, like, in horror or crumpled in the corner?
Yeah.
Probably all just made up.
Really?
They x-ray them and there's like the stuff just doesn't fit.
Huh.
So the guy who made the original plaster cast was just freelancing a bit on those.
Wow.
Making them look more poignant and everything.
So did people actually die, or it just didn't?
Well, they think there's like mismatched bones kind of crammed into the plaster.
Oh, wow.
So he was just a fraud, I guess. At least that's what this show implied. If I'm impugning anyone, I apologize.
Wow, what a dumbass. Well, I guess that's how you get like the vacillating between like Brontosaurus never existed. Oh, it did again.
Right.
Type of thing.
Right.
All right. So now we have one from Justin. This we just covered. Tom loves an adventure. I liked his reasoning for it. Tom loves an adventure. It's why back in the day he joined the army. He said it reminded him of 64 Squares, which is actually pretty spot on. a character like the sheriff or something, like, you know, the simplistic view of. Why did he join the army? Oh, he wanted an adventure. Okay.
Right.
Who is the sheriff of this army unit? Brad wrote in. He says, this is, I think, when he was going back to his home. I don't correct him. After all, as much as it pains me, I am the Earl. And Brad just says, yeah, so right. What is there to correct him about?
Right.
Brian submitted, even the familiar grace and beauty of the boy with a dolphin statue on the corner cannot lift my mood. We touched on that. We touched on, did we do this one? Andrew said, I hope to God that my bank balance is bigger than his,
yes.
Which is just truly, truly just an amazing, I mean, I guess you can't change who you are, but really, really amazing that made its way into the final draft of a character that we're supposed to care about.
Right.
And let me see what mine were. What's yours?
Well, mine were all burnt, but can I once again appeal to the judges to allow a good sentence that it's not dumb necessarily. It's pretty good.
Okay.
This is from Mrs. Beckstrom.
Oh, boy.
After the she talks about the burglars. I think the police have them already. Good. I hope they hang them. Says Mrs. Beckstrom. I just like the fact that, like, Jenkins, Beckstrom, just willing to kill for this guy.
Bloodthirsty, like, yeah.
Yeah, they busted up my computer and took some photos. I hope they hang him. So and I just like that Beckstrom was bloodthirsty.
And Alicia's response to that was thinking to herself, hang? They hang people here? And it's like, yeah, like, settle down. You didn't know that they let dogs inside the house. So maybe you shouldn't be so quick to assume that you know everything about this country where you're wandering around doe-eyed in.
And Anatoly said, smuggling men?
So. Prunes? mine were both burnt, too. We had the boy with the dolphin, which I had highlighted, and I also highlighted, Maxim, the only thing you love is your dick. Which, yeah, I assume she just, like, you know, she's, you know, it is like the queen of the harpies in, I think it's from Virginia Woolf, but I only know it from The Simpsons. But
yeah, yes. Well, that's true of many things before the 80s, isn't it?
Very, yes, exactly. There was time before the 80s? I have decade object permanence.
Classic 80s,
yes.
Man.
Well, I think that's all we have for this week. You know, obviously finish the book for next week, and we're going to see if those predictions we made pay off.
And as soon as this is over, off air, I'm going to talk to Connor about doing up some merch, and you guessed it, Bleary on his bucket. Maybe a $15.99 maybe price point.
Right, get a branded branded one.
Number 10 pails of, from the restaurant that stored pickle chips.
Right. It'll be $10.99 full or $15.99 empty, I'd say.
I almost got into the absolutely true discussion of me inheriting a house from my uncle filled with pails of his own feces. True story. If you're a Patreon person, maybe I'll tell that.
Oh, that's a good that's a good thing. Yes, absolutely. Please do.
All right.
All right.
Well, thanks, everyone. This has been 372 pages. We'll never get back.
See you next time.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.